VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. Despite being defeated on H.R. 1, S. 1, and S-2093, the attack is continuing on the election process. The attempts by the federal government to take over elections is intensifying with yet another piece of legislation known as the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. Well, according to our guest today, the tenets of this legislation are worse than what we've seen previous. Joining us, we welcome back Constitutional Attorney Matt Staver, the founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt has over 300 published legal opinions and has authored 8 scholarly law review publications. He's host of Faith and Freedom, and Freedom's Call has argued 2 landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. Matt, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be with you.
So before we get to this John Lewis Voting Rights Act, a couple decisions handed down from the U.S. Supreme Court this morning. The first I'd like to mention is the 6-3 ruling that protects the confidentiality of donors to charities and nonprofits, a case out of California. Tell us about it.
Yeah, they had this donor disclosure law that California passed. Leave it to California to do something like this. And it says that the entities and nonprofits that do any business in California must disclose their highest donors, and that would be public record. So anybody in California could find who your highest donors are. Obviously, that was designed to intimidate conservative, pro-life, pro-family, pro-religious liberty organizations, because once those donors are made public, then they're going to be doxxed, they're going to be targeted, you know, just like what happened with regards to Proposition 8. You remember,
yes,
the guy who gave a contribution to support Proposition 8. He was head of one of the big tech companies, and he got pushed out, and he was the founder of one of the companies. He now has created the thing called Brave, which is an internet protection or security situation in terms of your privacy and ads and so forth. But he got pushed out of a company that he actually was head of because he had given a couple $1,000 to support Proposition 8. That was the initiative that would say marriage is the union of a man and a woman. And so we've seen this before where these liberals want to get the voter or the names of those donors, whether it's to Proposition 8 or to a pro-family organization, and then they go after them and they target them. And these individual donors don't, obviously, they're not involved in the culture wars. They don't want to get their family or their careers or their lives put in jeopardy, so it would intimidate them. California said, you've got to do it. So that was a lawsuit. Two organizations brought the case up to the United States Supreme Court. The good thing is the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, should have been 9-0, but 6-3 with the liberals in the dissent, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Breyer, Kagan writing the dissent, they ultimately upheld the law and upheld the right to not disclose and struck down the law, saying it was a violation of the First Amendment.
Yeah, and this, ladies and gentlemen, this would have taken doxing to a whole new level.
Oh my.
I mean, it's just horrendous what this was going to do. Now, Matt, this was a situation in California, but their decision impacts the whole of the nation, correct?
Yeah, it impacts the whole of the nation. So, you know, sometimes what happens in California doesn't always stay, unfortunately, in California. It's the most liberal state with the most liberal legislature. But oftentimes it starts there and goes outside of California. This now stops it across the board. Any other state that has or was considering something like this, they're done. It's over with. So this is a great decision.
Yeah.
And it protects, the individual donor, protects these organizations from literally being targeted. And frankly, it has in the past put people's lives in jeopardy.
Yes.
We saw, for example, during the election last year, how the doxing of these attorneys at these law firms took place. And they were so intimidated, they withdrew because they were afraid for themselves and their families and their businesses.
Well, friends, again, that decision came out just hours ago from the U.S. Supreme Court, a 6-3 decision there. Matt, there's a second decision that was handed down also this morning, also a 6-3 decision regarding voting rules that were established in the state of Arizona. Tell us about this.
Yeah, these voting rules were established a couple of years ago, and they finally made their way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the two primary voting reform measures were, one, to ban ballot harvesting, I'll come back to that, and to require that the voter go to a designated precinct on election day. And so on election day, you have a certain precinct that you go vote to. You can't go vote to any of these other precincts because it's much harder to track, you know, who is actually registered and who's not when you do that. And that was challenged. They were challenged under the Voting Rights Act. That goes back to 1965. The Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, the same split with the same dissenters, ultimately upheld Arizona's law and said that it does not violate the Voting Rights Act, the Federal Voting Rights Act, that in fact it is a good decision. In fact, it says that it is reasonable for a state, they have a strong interest in limiting the kinds of people that can actually be designated to pick up or receive ballots. But in some places, and we saw this in the 2020 election, you have these organizations, individual people, these activist groups, ACLU type, and other kinds of George Soros supporting organizations, Mark Zuckerberg supporting, you know, entities or people that would just massively go around and they would collect ballots. They would go in nursing homes. They would go in other places. They would collect ballots, and then they would take them to a drop box or some place to drop them off in huge bulk deliveries. And we saw that in 2020. The Arizona law said, no, you can't have that here. In fact, that particular same situation has just occurred in Georgia. Georgia has passed a similar law that also bans ballot harvesting. And just a few days ago, the House had a hearing for this John Lewis Act that we'll talk about in a few moments. And one of the people with the organization that's a very liberal one was so upset that Georgia banned ballot harvesting that she and her group could no longer just massively, you know, have these massive ballot harvesting campaigns. Well, the Supreme Court upheld Arizona's law, which means every other state that is enacting these reforms that would say you can't have ballot harvesting and that on election day you have to vote in a designated precinct, those will be upheld. That, however, has caused outrage to the Democratic Socialist Marxists in Washington, D.C., and they're now more intent than ever in passing their election fraud bills.
Well, Matt, we're going to segue to this John Lewis Act in just a moment, but I've been seeing just a number of stories popping up that are seeming to put pressure on Justice Stephen Breyer to resign. I mean, he's 82 years old. He'll be 83 in August, but there are those that are seeming to put pressure on him to step down so that President Biden can put a much younger liberal on the nation's highest court. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that is the rumor that we're hearing also through our office in Washington, D.C., that there may be an announcement. You know, obviously he wouldn't otherwise resign. He's in, you know, fairly good health from what everybody understands. But he's getting a lot of pressure, and the pressure is looking back at Ginsburg. Ginsburg did not resign when she could have during Obama's second term because she thought for a fact, she had no idea that this would not happen, that Hillary Clinton would actually be the president. She wanted to have a female Hillary Clinton nominate her replacement. Well, she was the most disappointed probably of everyone in the outcome of the 2016 election. As a result of that, there's a lot of pressure on Breyer to step down because I believe they realize that Biden is a one-term office holder. And that he will be replaced by some more conservative president of the United States in the next go round. And I think they also believe that they're going to significantly lose the Senate in 2024. So their only window right now is for Breyer to step down now, and that's the pressure they're putting on him. And you're right, they want him to step down so they can replace him with a very liberal, younger justice on the Supreme Court. Mm.
Well, we'll continue to be watching what happens here. But, folks, it's a matter of prayer. And I know that Senator Mitch McConnell has talked about not bringing such a nomination forth during an election year, which will transpire here next year in 2022. But keep in mind there's a whole lot at stake with this. and a lot of pressure being placed upon Justice Breyer right now. Well, Matt, you were with us just a week ago here in the program, and we were discussing the so-called For the People Act, H.R. 1, S.1, then S.2093. The legislation was defeated last week, but the attempts to bring about a federal takeover of elections have not stopped, and you're saying even with the Supreme Court decision today that that is only going to intensify. Now, in the wake of defeat comes the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. You warned that this would be coming, Matt, and you have some great concerns about the legislation, and I'm going to have you address that point because you have called it dangerous. Tell us about it.
Yeah, the John Lewis Act, I'll just call it that for short, the John Lewis Act, it was renamed for the late John Lewis last year. It failed, and now they're wanting to bring it back again. This is the so-called Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, compromise, but it's not a compromise. It's worse than H.R. 1, S.1, because it would allow everything in those bills to come to pass and more. Here's essentially what it does, and here's what we'll want to flesh out as we go forward. It provides for nationwide preclearance. Preclearance is prior approval. And the prior approval comes from the Department of Justice, the Biden Deep State Department of Justice. They would have total control over every aspect of every election going forward. So they would be able to ban voter ID. So, for example, when Georgia wants to pass its law that says no ballot harvesting, and you'd have to have voter ID. They would have to get prior approval, prior permission from the Department of Justice to even put that law up for a vote. And the DOJ could simply say no. And it would be the burden of the state of Georgia to go ahead and pass the law, get it signed, and then file suit and take years of litigation and a lot of cost to get it all the way to the Supreme Court to determine whether or not they can do exactly what they did. And so that's the problem. It literally puts the DOJ in absolute control of everything. And we already know the Biden DOJ has just now filed suit against Georgia because they don't like the voter ID law. They don't like the fact that there is no ballot harvesting. They're trying to stop the Arizona recount for the 2020 presidential election. Now, if you actually empowered them with the authority to actually do it just by withholding approval, then we've lost all future elections. So it is far worse than anything that was in H.R. 1, S.1, because it will allow everything in those bills and much more.
Well, Matt, I find it very interesting because we're talking about Merrick Garland, are we not, the Attorney General?
Yeah, well, we're talking about Merrick Garland, but there's a whole section within.
And the point I'm making right now, and we're 30 seconds from the break, is he was nearly a Supreme Court justice, but he is the one that would be putting have to give this preclearance to any state that wants to change their voting laws.
Exactly, he would, and there is a voting rights division within the Department of Justice, and it's dominated by pro ACLU, pro Southern Poverty Law Center, pro La Raza, pro Democratic policy. Career employees.
And this is a very important point Matt is just making here, because this hierarchy of these groups, sinister groups in my opinion, are ones that would give preclearance to states. Guess what, folks? That preclearance would never happen. We'll talk more about it after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, do creationists say that the biblical flood laid down all the fossils?
No, we don't, Chris. Now, we do think that the flood of Noah's day is responsible for most of the fossils in geologic strata, but certainly not all. We talk about a time of residual catastrophism after the flood, which included the Ice Age. During this time, a lot of fossils were formed. Ice Age fossils would typically lie on top of the flood fossils, which came earlier. Now, of course, there are some fossils being formed today in minor catastrophes, minor floods, minor tsunamis. But these are of local extent, not like the fossils in strata from the flood. Chris, the biblical story of Noah's flood is absolutely essential for a full creation understanding. Let's go back to Genesis and get it right.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Yes, we're talking about the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, otherwise just known as the John Lewis Act. We're referring to that today here in the program. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver is with us from Liberty Counsel. Matt, this piece of legislation, this act, is really, really centered on this one word called preclearance, meaning that the Department of Justice and this division that is so dominated by groups like you said, the ACLU and Human Rights Campaign, La Raza, they would be the ones that would be giving thumbs down, really, to any state that would want to protect the integrity of the vote.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, we already have spoken to individuals. Some individuals that have worked in the Department of Justice and have left the Department of Justice. One person, Maureen Riordan, she worked there for 20 years. She says that it is dominated by people who are pro-ACLU, pro-Southern Poverty Law Center. In fact, in some cases, they've actually sent out entire files to the ACLU without the ACLU asking for them because they said, oh, I think the ACLU would be interested in this case. And they literally send them out to the ACLU. So it's been dominated by the deep state, pro-Democrat, pro-ACLU kinds of people. And that's what would actually be behind the voting approvals or withholding approval. Let me give you an example. This is a hypothetical, but then I'll give you a real example. Because it's this micromanaged. Say, for example, you have an election that happens in November in Florida. And Florida just had some storms that came through. And it's in a civic center. And you have it in room A. And that's where the election day balloting is going to be. But because of the storm that just came through, the night before, the day before, that particular room is not inhabitable. It had a leak in the roof or something of that nature. So you need to move the ballot booth from room A across the hallway in the same building to room B. And you're having to try to do that through the night to get everything set up for the polls opening up at 7 a.m. in the morning. You would have to get prior approval from the Department of Justice Voting Rights Division to move that ballot box across the hall from room A to room B, even if it's in the same building.
Ridiculous.
That's how micromanaged this is. In fact, in one case, there was a city that wanted to annex some additional property within the county. And we've seen that, for example, in Central Florida, in the Orange County area versus the city of Orlando. Sometimes on one side of the street, it's county. On the other side of the same street in the same neighborhood, it's city. So city water and fire and police are on one side, county water and fire and police are on the other side. So when you call 911, sometimes the 911 operator doesn't know whether to dispatch the county or the city. And so in order to avoid that thing, the city wants to annex a little bit of the property and avoid all that confusion, have better services. Well, there's an actual case in Alabama where preclearance was previously used by the Department of Justice to ban a city from annexing a small piece of property, and the reason why is it added two new white voters to that precinct. And so the DOJ said no, because it will add two white voters to this predominantly black neighborhood for this predominantly, Democratic voting precinct, and they did not approve it. It just because of two voters because of the color of their skin.
Right.
I mean, that's an actual case. And so that's the kind of thing that would happen with a nationwide preclearance. And that would be every state, every territory, and it means every law that has ever come up, any kind of voting reform, voter recounts, ballot harvesting bans, whatever it is, voter ID, all of those would have to get pre-approval from the Department of Justice, and any minor adjustments also have to get pre-approval.
Matt, how do you call this a piece of compromise legislation? Because this is worse than the first. I mean, this would include all of the first plus much more.
Yeah, it really is no compromise. It's just like, you use the word For the People Act for this voting law. Well, it's not for the people. It's only for some, and it disenfranchises the majority of people that they don't want to have vote. The Equality Act has nothing to do with equality because it guts religious freedom and ultimately expands abortion. So here, you know, the compromise is really not a compromise. It's actually, instead of getting 100% of what you want, you're getting 125% of what you asked for.
I mean, this really strikes at the heart of state sovereignty. I mean, to override, you know, what laws a state will put into place, to override what local municipalities wish to do in this regard. I mean, it really strikes at the heart of that and puts all that power right in the seat of the Department of Justice.
No, you're absolutely right. It puts the whole power in the Department of Justice. States would never have, and we're not only talking about states, but counties. You know, if counties want to have some adjustment on something with, mm-hmm. consistent with the state law, every aspect, state, local, every single aspect would have to have the Department of Justice approval. In order to do that, you have to have massive amounts of new funding for the Department of Justice, because in order to have this on a nationwide scale at this micromanagement level,
yes.
you've got to blow up the staff at the Department of Justice and make it much larger. You're talking about billions of dollars of money. And so in order to do that, number one, the taxpayers are going to have to pay for that. Number two, it's so much more new money. That's the mechanism that they'll try to use to get it past the filibuster and ride the wagon of the budget reconciliation as an additional spending provision.
It seems like the likes of Senator Joe Manchin, who stood against the other, you know, S1, HR1, stood against it. How can he back something like this? I mean, does he not see that as being a double standard? What is in this that was not in the others that he feels is not as egregious?
You know, it's hard to know what goes through his mind on something like this. You know, he's flip-flopped on a couple of things. He said he was going to vote against HR1. He ended up voting for it on the day that it was voted on, and that gave him a 50-50 split, but that wasn't enough to overcome the 60-vote filibuster. So we have to constantly put pressure now on both the House and the Senate, which includes Manchin, but it includes others, because now that they're pushing this John Lewis Act, that can be brought up in either the House or the Senate, whereas HR1 was already passed in the House, and the only target was the Senate. It was in the Senate, and that's where the battle was focused on. The John Lewis Act can come up either way. You remember how they did Obamacare? They already have a bill. They already have S1 there, which is the HR1 bill that came from the House. Remember what they did with the Obamacare? They had a bill on Obamacare from the House, and what the Senate did was they struck everything after the introduction of the bill, after the title, and then they replaced it with their own version, passed it, and then sent that version over to the House. And remember, there was a controversy, since it was a spending bill, whether or not the Senate could do that. And unfortunately, Roberts made a wrong decision, and he upheld that particular decision, which I think was wrong. But that's what they can do. They already have the voting bills, S1 and S2093, they can literally strike the whole thing from the very beginning, impose the John Lewis Act, vote on it, send it back to the House. Alternatively, the House has just had hearings on it. In fact, on this week, just a few days ago, they gave less than 24 hours notice for a hearing on the John Lewis Act. I've never seen that before. When the calendar came out at noon, the hearing the next morning at 9 or 10 o'clock was not on the calendar. And then mid to late afternoon, they notice that they're going to have a hearing, and boom, the next morning they have this emergency hearing on the John Lewis Act. So there is movement already in the House to move forward. And I can tell you now that after this particular decision from the Supreme Court upholding Arizona's law that bans ballot harvesting and limits same-day voting to a designated precinct, they're outraged because their bills, including the John Lewis Act, would allow same thing, actually wanted to expand voter ballot harvesting. And ballot harvesting means that anybody can pick up mass amounts of ballots. So you don't have to have a designated official person that receives the ballots.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, the post office or some other person, you know, that is designated as an election official. Anybody can pick them up. And that's what's in these bills. And so they're going to be completely outraged by the fact that Arizona's law was upheld, and they're going to use that as reason to push forward to move forward with this John Lewis Act.
Now, Matt, also just to show the support that is growing for this, on Monday and Tuesday of this week, I received emails from the Congressional Black Caucus PAC who are very concerned that H.R. 1 did not pass. And on Monday, the email that came to us from them stated this, quote, "Republicans just launched their latest attack on our right to vote. They'll do anything to suppress black and brown voters. But there's hope. Experts say President Biden could sign an executive order that would make H.R. 1 the law of the land." They were collecting 75,000 signatures by this email here, Matt, to urge President Biden to do so. They make these allegations. They say, quote, "Republican voter suppression will only get worse. Millions of black and brown voters could be denied their right to vote, and we could lose our Democratic majority in Congress forever." Then they stated this, "We can't afford to lose H.R. 1, not when the fate of our democracy hangs in the balance." That was Monday of this week. Another email Tuesday raising support to help get this John Lewis Act passed. Your response to this?
Well, to the first one, Biden has no authority to issue an executive order that would implement H.R. 1. That would be completely easily challenged, and he has no authority to do so. I'm not saying he won't do it. He just doesn't have the constitutional authority to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly they're pushing forth with the John Lewis Act. And you have to listen to their language. They talk about, you know, restricting access to the ballot box. Well, you know, it's the Democrats. If you go back, they've been very familiar with Jim Crow laws. You know, a lot of times people think of Jim Crow, they think of Republicans. Now, Republicans actually were started because they were the abolitionists, and the Democrats were the slavery, pro-KKK party.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the Civil War and after some of these constitutional amendments and some of these other rights that allowed blacks the equal opportunity to vote, it was the Democrats who pushed what is called the Jim Crow laws. And what they wanted to do is to prohibit black individuals from voting. Because after the African Americans were allowed to vote, a number of African Americans were elected to Congress as Republicans. And that outraged the Democrats. And so that's what happened with the Jim Crow laws, to put barriers in front of them to vote. Well, now they're using a modern Jim Crow tactic. They're using racism as their rhetoric. They're using access to the ballot as their rhetoric. But in reality, what they want to do is restrict access to the ballot by individuals who are conservative value voters. For example, you know, just like what Mark Zuckerberg did in Philadelphia and other places like that. He went into heavily Democratic precincts,
mm-hmm.
and he funded many, many drop boxes. There were drop boxes to drop these ballots off everywhere. That is a rot fraught with fraud. We'll talk about that as we come back.
This is Crosstalk here on VCY America. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. Their website, lc.org. And folks, indeed, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, there's a lot of pressure being pushed to advance this legislation now in the wake of the defeat of H.R. 1 and S1. More on it after the break here on Crosstalk.
Are you aware of past crises when America's fate hung desperately in the balance? From the French and Indian War, the Revolution, the Civil War, and other national events, leaders in our country called the nation to prayer. In the book, Miracles in American History, author Susie Federer, the wife of historian and researcher Bill Federer, recounts 32 amazing stories of answered prayer from American history. You'll read about events such as the winter at Valley Forge, the Boston Tea Party, dense fog that appeared, allowing 8,000 troops to escape, the Star-Spangled Banner, and other events where prayer had an impact. You'll also learn when Apollo 13 was lost in space, what happened after the president called the nation to prayer. It's a reminder as to how badly prayer is needed for our nation today. Copies of Miracles in American History are available for a donation of $18 to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, with us today, Attorney Matt Staver, and talking about this John Lewis Act, and really takes all the prongs, all the tenets of H.R. 1, S1, S2093 that we talked about just a week ago, and puts really all of this under the authority of the Department of Justice. They would have to give pre-clearance for any changes in elections or election law, or as he stated, even moving across the hallway to cast votes because of a rainstorm that did damage to the room that was going to be used. I mean, micromanaging of the election. Well, Matt, there's we keep hearing about this trying to stop the black, the brown vote. But keep in mind, we have seen that the polls that have come out on those who want picture ID, photo ID for voting, the majority of African Americans want to see that take place, but yet they continue to talk about blocking access to the ballot and trying to say Republicans are blocking access to the ballot. Your further response on this?
Look, nobody wants to block access to the ballot. There is, except Democrats. There's no Republican that I know of that wants to block access to the ballot. What we want as Americans across the country is that your vote count. One person, one vote, one living, legal, registered citizen, one vote. That's really all we want, transparency and fairness, and then let the person who gets the most votes win. We don't want to be manipulated by computers, and we don't want to have all kinds of fraudulent ballot dumps at 2 a.m. in the morning. We just want fair elections. That's it. And so one of the ways to do that, I mean, the United States, for example, spent millions and millions and millions of dollars in Afghanistan to be able to provide voter ID. Over there, they use iris scanning and several other kinds of techniques to make sure that you're the actual real person that's supposed to be voting. So we have done that overseas in many, many countries. And yet when you talk about we need voter ID, or you need voter ID to go check out a library book, then they'll say, oh, well, you're trying to block access. Look, the history shows that it's the Democratic Party that is the one experienced in blocking access to the ballot. That's their Jim Crow laws, that they blocked access for, you know, decades to the black voter because they were voting and they were becoming elected as Republicans, and many of them were elected to the United States Congress, the House and the Senate. They didn't like that, so they tried to block access. What they're doing now is they're using false rhetoric, absolutely opposite of what's actually happening, and they're really trying to block access to people that they don't want to have their vote counted. Let me give you an example. You know, we said that what Mark Zuckerberg did is he spent hundreds of millions of dollars, and he was funding different states to put, for example, in Philadelphia, drop boxes like every few feet in very heavily Democratic precincts, so you could increase the number of votes there. But he didn't do that across the state of Pennsylvania, just in very select places. Under the John Lewis Act, the Department of Justice could do that on a massive scale. So let's just take Pennsylvania as an example. The Department of Justice could say that Pennsylvania and Philadelphia have to increase the number of drop boxes in the heavily Democratic or blue voting precincts in order to provide better access for the ballot. That would be the rhetoric. But the result would be drop boxes everywhere, mass mail-in ballots everywhere. Every person in the world could be a gatherer of mass amounts of ballots and harvest ballots. But in these other areas in Pennsylvania, the primarily red or conservative Republican voting precincts, you don't need those drop boxes, and you can't do ballot harvesting. They could micromanage any state down to the individual portions of the precinct to increase Democratic voters and decrease Republican or conservative independent voters. That's the problem with the JL, John Lewis Act, and these other bills that they're pushing. They know how to suppress the vote, and these bills would suppress the vote of conservative and independent voters.
So, Matt, there is right now, we don't know of a date set for a vote on this other than that they've held a hearing. We know that the We are seeing, as I mentioned, the Congressional Black Caucus PAC speaking out on a regular basis on this. We know there's pressure for them to put this, especially with that Supreme Court decision coming down this morning.
Yeah, we do know that, especially with the Supreme Court decision coming down this very day, that is going to outrage them, and they're going to use that as more fodder. I can guarantee you that the top of the news talking points of the Democrats is going to be that the Supreme Court upheld the Republicans'
voter suppression
laws in Arizona, yeah. And all the more reason we need to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act or whatever they're going to say. But that's the talking points. And that's all their liberal agenda that they're going to do. Look, I think if you give them the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, you not only put the DOJ in charge of every election, every detail of every election, but who's behind the DOJ pulling the strings, the career employees that are inside there. It's really going to be putting the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, George Soros, and people like Mark Zuckerberg in charge of every one of our future elections. If that's the case, America's doomed. As we are in the eve of celebrating Independence Day, while we're looking forward to celebrating freedom that so many people fought and died to give us that privilege today, there are people in Congress right now working feverishly to undermine that freedom through these so-called voting laws, particularly with the new version of the John Lewis Act.
Friends, I'm going to give you three phone numbers. The first one is our call-in number here at Crosstalk today, where you can get on board, ask a question of Matt, make a brief comment. That number is 800-733-9829. Our call-in number, 800-733-9829. I also want to give you a number for the House of Representatives and a number for the Senate as well. The House main switchboard is 202-225-3121. That's 202-225-3121. And the Senate is 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And Matt, I'm sure if people referred this to the John Lewis Voting Act, the Congress would know exactly what it's all about.
Yes, I think you're right. At the John Lewis Act, you would know everyone would know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So just say John Lewis Act and they'll know what you're talking about.
Because we don't see a specific bill number yet for this, do we?
No, the bill number used to be H.R. 4, and that came from last 2019, and it didn't pass. So the old bill number is H.R. 4, but we don't have a current bill number on it.
Yeah.
But that's easy to fix. You know, they could just pop it into H.R. 1. They could pop it into S1. The bill number is not that important right now at this stage, John Lewis Act, and that'll cover everything.
Let's go to the phone lines here, PAC. Susan, you're our first caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering, could Matt write up something short that people could tell, hand out to their neighbors, whatever, about this? And, you know, what it's all about. And mention that soft business. Most people know about that.
Mm-hmm. So a sheet of talking points. Matt, I think you've got that, don't you? On the website? Matt, are you with us?
Yes, we have lc.org/HR1, and that was and we're still using the same URL. So we have new talking points there on the John Lewis Act that you can go there and look at. And you can also fax and send a petition. So we've modified everything, but we're still using the same URL, lc.org/HR1.
Okay, because that pastor said we've got to get out there. Hmm. You know, the pastor from Canada?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Pastor Arthur Pawlowski. Thank you so much, Susan. Appreciate your call. Let's go next to Trevor. You're on the air, Trevor.
Hey, guys. Tell me if I'm crazy or not. What does me being black have to do with my ability to go get an ID and vote? I'm confused.
Well, you should be, because there is nothing to your skin color that inhibits you to get a voter ID, some kind of voter ID. For example, in Georgia,
it's great.
But what they're doing is the Democrats are trying to make it like, well, it's a racist issue, and yet most blacks that are polled say they want voter ID. And in fact, if you look at Georgia's law, it's been misrepresented by the Democrats and the media. they have a lot of different ways that you can satisfy the voter ID. It's not just a driver's license. There's a lot of different options for voter ID, and it makes it easy to get a voter ID. You just have to have some kind of identification.
You know, I'm looking at a survey here too, Trevor, and I see it's from the Daily Wire. 69% of black voters support voter ID. I mean, but yet they try to utilize skin color as a means to drive a wedge on this issue.
Yeah, I think it's racist for them to do that because it stereotypes people because of their skin color that either they don't want or they can't receive a voter ID. I mean, that's just pure racism.
Just one more thing. Like, if I went to the hood or anywhere where it's populated with black folks, and I asked any one of them if they had an ID, every one of them would say, yes, I have an ID. But the Democrats are so racist, they're saying just because your pigmentation is a lighter shade, you have the intelligence to go to the DMV and get an ID and find a voter booth. But if you're any type of brown or black, you're too stupid to figure it out. This is... It's funny.
It's offensive. It's offensive, and it is racist. But they use this, they use the race card to excite their base. That's really all they're doing. And then the media just picks it up and goes with it.
Thank you, Trevor, for the call here today. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Tim is our next caller. Hi, Tim, you're on the air.
I daily I'm listening to this, and it just seems to be getting worse and worse. You know, the Agenda 21, the Agenda 30, now the people involved in Congress, the military generals. It sounds like they've got this, and they've been doing this so long. I wouldn't even doubt if there's people in the Supreme Court that they've gotten stacked in there. When do we give up hope that there's anything left we can do?
It's a good question, Tim. And Matt, I know we'd encourage Tim, never give up hope.
Yeah, let me give you an example. This is now July 1. We're 6 months into this situation here with Biden in the White House. And the number one priority was to pass this H.R. 1, the so-called For the People Act. Pelosi says everything of their agenda hangs on. And they said, you know, other ones have said, they have to get this done, otherwise they won't get their liberal agenda passed. But here we are, July 1, and it's not passed. And they're frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't it not passed? Because we haven't given up. What about H.R. 5? That's their second priority. It hasn't passed either.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it won't, but it hasn't passed because people are pushing back.
Don't give up, Tim. Continue in the battle. I'm up against a break. Thank you for the call. We'll be back in 1 minute. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. On June 27th, there was breaking news that the United States military had struck a Iranian militant group that were running drone programs right there on the border of Iraq and Syria. Those that are Bible prophecy students will immediately recognize the significance of that report. Think about it. Syria and Iran. Iran, Russia, Turkey, right there in Syria. I saw a picture recently where the president of Iran, the president of Russia, and the president of Turkey were all in a group picture with their hands clasped together. They're in military alliance. This has not been the case, except for a very short period of time. And the Bible tells us in Ezekiel 38, these groups, along with others, will make up a coalition that comes against Israel, and God will protect them. Bible prophecy is being set to be fulfilled.
The program is called Crosstalk. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Council and talking about this John Lewis Voting Rights Act that is making its way through Congress at this time. Great frustration that H.R. 1 did not pass last week, or S1, or H.R. 1 did pass the House. It did not pass the Senate, got bottled up there. And folks, that's another priority. They want to get rid of the filibuster, and efforts will be made to that very end. Talking about these issues today, critical issues, and let's get to Laura in Watertown, South Dakota. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you so much, Matt, for all you do. God bless your hard work. Say, I've got three names I would like to give you. I'm going to give them to you because I feel they're so important for you to know who your enemies are. According to the New American June 7th issue, Justice Stephen H. Breyer is on the judicial system and is also the Council of Foreign Relations, along with Justice Neil M. Gorsuch, listed as a prior membership, and also Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Now, if you know about the Council on Foreign Relations...
Well, yeah, and we're not going to go down that direction here, Laura, but let me just say this, that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is passed away, and also Justice Gorsuch, whom you named, though I am not going to agree with all issues on him, on this voting issue that took place, the vote that was released this morning, Matt, he was part of that 6-6 vote majority.
He was part of the 6-3 majority, mm-hmm. Yeah, that upheld the Arizona's law that banned the ballot harvesting mm-hmm. and required the designated precinct on election day.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's a great decision. But yeah, I agree that we obviously need to know who our enemies are. And I want to follow up a little bit, just briefly, Jim, with the caller that was just there. As you said, we never, ever give up. And we have been able to stymie this agenda. And, you know, for example, a soldier, when he or she, you know, a soldier doesn't give up after one engagement. You fight and you fight and you fight and you fight again. An Olympic athlete doesn't just practice once. You're doing it over and over and over and over again. And it may seem like, well, we're just doing the same thing. Yeah, but you have to do that to win. Mm-hmm. Just like you can't just engage in one battle and then you're home and then you're done, you're all done. You have to fight until the battle is won. Mm-hmm. And we have been able to stymie this agenda. And we cannot ever get weary or give up.
Yeah. Laura, I do thank you for the call. We want to stay focused on this voting issue here. And I know with the Supreme Court justices, again, one that you mentioned has passed away. Another one that you mentioned is one that voted for voting, integrity
Gorsuch
laws.
Gorsuch is listed, indicated mm-hmm. as a prior. But Stephen mm-hmm. Breyer, you know.
Yep. Yeah,
seeing that it is the Council of Foreign Relations and mm-hmm. Biden saying that Richard Haass is his boss and Hillary Clinton saying that Council of Foreign Relations is a mothership, the real puppet masters behind all this, besides the Congress and the George Soros and Bill Gates and, you know.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Laura. And again, we're going to save that topic for another day. We've dealt with that before here as well. Let's go to Mike in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air, Mike.
Well, talking about knowing the enemy, one of the telling things for me during the Trump administration was there was some ball game in D.C. where the crowd just booed like crazy, and I was just appalled, whereas everywhere else across the country, there were cheers for President Trump.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, there's a problem, President Trump. You got to discern your enemies concentrated in D.C., and we're at a disadvantage because as Christians and moral people, we're commanded to respect those to whom respect is due, even if, you know, like in Obama, we don't agree with them. I'd like to think we would never do that type of stuff, but what a battle we have. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Mike. Matt, your response.
Well, no, I think you're right. I think one of the things that happened is during the Trump administration, we began to realize, and I think we're seeing it even more, how deep the deep state really is. And the, you know, we have a video that we have on our HR1 website, and it's a couple of people that worked in the DOJ Voting Rights Division, and they'll talk about how deep that deep state is and how very radical and liberal it is. And that's what they want to empower to take over every aspect of the election. Imagine having Biden's deep state DOJ with those that are pulling the strings, like ACLU, Soros, you know, all the other liberal groups that are behind that and that are supported by people inside, in charge of every aspect of our election. I mean, America would be gone. So on this election, on this eve of Independence Day, we need to fight hard for our freedom and never give up. And we need to oppose this John Lewis Voting Rights Act.
Folks, just a reminder, again, the phone number to your House member, 202-225-3121, and to your senator, 202-224-3121. We're going to get one last call in. Will in Burlington, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going today? Yeah, we need to stand up against this, and also I believe we need to call our local government officials as well, and also just wanted to say to stand against abortion. We'll be in Lake Geneva tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m.
Thank you, Will.
On Highway 50 by Walmart.
Thank you, Will. Let me say this, Matt. He talked about contacting your local officials, and I think he's got a point there, because really, if those local officials are going to have to go to the United States Department of Justice to get approval for anything they do, I mean, it's important that they know what's going on here and they get engaged as well.
Yeah, they ought to get engaged as well, because this will literally put them on the sidelines, because they'll have to say, Mother, may I, in this case, DOJ, may I, for everything they do, as minute as annexing a few pieces of property from a city to a county, as minute as moving a polling booth from room A to room B in the same building.
Yeah, yeah. Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Council. And Matt, again, you said that you've got information on your website, so give us a URL where our listeners can go and get that info.
Yeah, the URL is lc.org/HR1, lc.org/HR1, and we've modified information there, but we're still using the same URL. So you can go there, find information about the John Lewis Act and how you can respond to the House as well as the Senate, lc.org/HR1.
And friends, can know this, the attacks are going to continue on this whole aspect of attacking voter integrity laws. They're going to come again on the whole LGBT issue coming on, the so-called Equality Act. That is going to still continue to be coming forth. Movements were just made from the Biden administration on it. There's going to be this thing called infrastructure legislation is a liberal's wish list as well, by putting their Green New Deal into it. Be vigilant, folks, and be in prayer for our nation. Matt, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
And folks, if you need to reach out to Liberty Council, their number, 407-875-1776. God bless you, folks. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.